Welcome to episode 489 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we share a conversation with a regular contributor, a good friend, renowned lecturer of Native American culture, musician, author, and artist, Frank Little Bear. We talk with Frank from his place in York, Pennsylvania, about the inspiration to teach his culture and history, indigenous prayers, equality, respect, tribal government, oral traditions, outsiders, invaders, respecting the environment, chiefs, fall colors, among other things. A great conversation with Little Bear Deerfoot this go-round. We have an EW essay titled Chief, and we share two short essays published for the August 2021 edition of the Sun Magazine's Reader's Write section by Jerry Thomas and Judith Shapiro with the theme Summer Jobs. We have an EW poem called Corn Muffins. And of course, all of this will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it then. Episode 489 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. Chief. Power, punishment, purity, bedevil me. I remember the first time it was explained by the white man to we young ones. There is where the battle began. I swear I did not know it was an exquisitely produced show digging deep into the annals of this psyche, planting visions and seeds, creating a web of lies, half-truths, and misconceptions. This Turtle Island and ancient Kanata are formed by the psychic gods of the endless universe. My breath is an insignificant hiccup inside a spinning cavern of deep everything, still and at once soaring, alive, into oblivion as I sit in this plush black chair somewhere we call home. It is not that different for most. Love and security, hope, special people. Alas, walking through a public park the other day, there was a powwow in action on display. The tribal council, along with its chief of history and culture, sat back on benches drinking homemade lemonade under state manicured poplar, maple, and ash as their leaves waved colorful in the autumn breeze, red, orange, yellow, brown, and green. I listened to a drumbeat that might have been imagined and hummed a song first heard in my youth. Everyone began to sing and dance. A set of businessmen rushed by into glass buildings, scraping the sky. No hello, no goodbye. Into the dream machine willingly.
Please don't let me lose my
Frank Little Bear, is that you?
Hey, that's me. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Hanging in there. So,
yeah, it's been
always getting around, always doing something.
Yeah, you got to. Otherwise, you know, once you stop, that's not a good thing. No.
Not at all.
Frank Little Bear is a friend of mine, I'm happy to say, and he's a regular contributor on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Let me give you a little background information, ladies and gentlemen, and all in between and otherwise. Frank Little Bear is of Cree Nation ancestry, a renowned lecturer of Native American culture. He is also a musician, artist, and author who has been recognized by universities, colleges, museums, and historical societies. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is happy to have back on the program Frank Little Bear. So, sir, where are you right now? You down there in York, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, good old York County, where my base of operations is, and where we're currently living out of a little place called Windsor, PA. and I've been running a lot of programs and things out of Red Lion area, which is like one town next door to us. So, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's a good area, good people.
Now, the Northern Cree ancestry.
Yeah.
That, I got that right, Northern Cree, right?
Exactly, yep.
That doesn't stem from York, though, does it?
No, actually, my family, for those that don't know a little bit about our family history and our backstory, we grew up on the East Coast. We're like the fifth generation born off our territory and out of our reservation. I personally grew up mostly on the East Coast. I've gone back to where the Sweetgrass Reservation is up in Battleford, Saskatchewan, Canada, growing up and stuff, and got to visit my cousins, learn ceremonies, traditions, hanging out with people like that up there. Been, you know, it's a lot of fun. my grandparents and parents were very, very predominant with tradition, culture, things like that, and that really inspired me within my culture to want to learn more about it, to try to, you know, excel about it, but also kind of living in two worlds, right? So, you know, living down on the East Coast, but also having our family up there. You know, we didn't have a lot of our people, you know, in New Jersey area, New York. So unless they were passing through for powwows, events, things like that. So it was always, like I said, it was always inspiring to me because I wanted to do the outreach, teach people about our culture. Even from an early on, a young age, I saw a lot of people that were fascinated with it. People that, really relished in wanting to be that. and then also the flip side to it, you know, people that absolutely couldn't stand indigenous culture. You know, they thought it should be extinct, archaic, things like that. So, you know, that was kind of sort of the onset for me to, you know, understand why those things happen with individuals, why they have those perspectives, you know, learning about the diversity, learning about where people come from, what makes them have those perspectives and maybe just get a better understanding of what they don't know and maybe we can learn from each other. And, you know, long story short, became a lecturer, teacher, artist, and, you know, just kind of keep rocking with it.
And when you say those people, I guess you're talking about European Americans.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, well, you know, what's kind of interesting about that is, excuse me, I've been singing, dancing, and screaming.
You got to quit smoking those Pall Malls.
I've got to, yeah, camels or something. So I got to switch to something. But, yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't just European Americans. I mean, it was, you know, there's a lot of people that, that grew up in sort of an urban or city environment where, you know, people of other ethnicities and cultures, especially who were predominant in their home or heritage, and they were proud of it or they would show it. You know, some people could be upset by that, you know, or so, you know, and that wasn't just in like an Anglo society. You know, I met people that were, you know, from an African-American society, Asian society, things like that. You know, and that like I said, it sort of came in all walks of life. Even our own people that were distant in their heritage and their lineage, you know, they adopted Catholicism or they adopted another faith or way of life, or, you know, they were brought up to believe that their heritage was something that should be suppressed and that wasn't predominant in their realm today in their life. But what's interesting about it is within our culture, it's literally something you're always connected to, right? So, you know, and you know, you have days where you just want to get up, go about your day. You don't want to be bothered with anything. Put the hood up, tie the hair back in a bun, throw glasses on, whatever. Want to go work out at the gym or something. Try to look as non-Indigenous as you possibly can, right? And those were the days where somebody would recognize me for something or would say, hey, you're that guy that did that show, or I saw you on TV, or I saw you do a lecture, or hey, you came to my school one time when I was a kid. And it was kind of like, you know, it was those sort of connections that re-inspired me to always be proud of my heritage, but also try to teach that to other people, you know.
Right. Right. I get it. And, you know, we mentioned that the Northern Cree background that you're connected to, yeah, is out of Canada. And, yep, you know, recently the monarch of Canada, Queen Elizabeth II, passed. Does that mean, right, anything to you?
Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, so, you know, we reflected as, you know, they came to colonize a lot of our people. They took a lot of our land. They built borders around our territories, things like that. So, you know, the history hasn't always been positive, you know, with treaties, parliaments, things like that. And we've always looked at with our sovereignty being a country within a country. So as Cree, like most Canadian tribes that have their sovereignty, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is our independence from the royal crown. However, we've also found a good balance with trying to make, you know, decisions and be included within what goes on in their parliament, with what goes on in their, you know, their territories, being well respected in those things, earning that respect both sides. So, most people don't know when a lot of the governments of Canada, they get together for, you know, their doctrines and stuff like that. And they open up all of their debates, all of their political realms, all of their courts with some sort of Indigenous prayer or song or some recognition to the First Nation people.
Hmm.
So, and it pays tribute to us. I mean, again, you know, even though, you know, there's a lot of laws that don't go in our favor, there's a lot of things that we still struggle with as Indigenous people, but we're still, you know, we fought for that equality to being brought to the table to be recognized with. So at least having that was always good. I mean, granted, when a lot of them first came here, you know, kind of funny story, you know, when they were coming through here, like, you know, the late 1700s, early 1800s, they, you know, they said, hey, you know, thanks for taking care of the land, but our queen wants it back. So we're going to, you know, manage you guys the best we can and do what we can for you. And we kind of looked at them like, you know, who's this queen? And she's never been here before. So like, what is, you know, like, what are they exactly talking about? So,
And how do you
with that?
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, no, go ahead. I have a question, but go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, but with that, you know, like I said, we still, if you look at Queen Elizabeth, if you look at the things that she did as a pioneer, you know, and then you hold that, you know, in account to what our tribal governments and, you know, our indigenous women and men inspire to when leading a nation or a country. And again, we look at ourselves as independent nations. So, you know, when, you know, we still pay that same respect, that same mourning, because, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, we may not have seen eye to eye and everything, but there were those moments, I think. And I think through that, we look back on, you know, what our own tribal government inspires to, you know, what are things that we're trying to govern our own people by, and, you know, the dignitaries that we have when they pass, how would we want to remember them? You know, whether we thought they were outstanding leaders for our communities, or, you know, they may have done something questionable, you know, in their leadership role. You know, being able to always respect that in some way, and, you know, like I said, find that connection, that balance.
Well, when you, you know, talk about the history that Indigenous people experienced in Canada when the English and other Europeans came in and basically took over, how did you hear those stories? I mean, you're not reading what your interpretation, or I agree with your interpretation, by the way. You're not hearing that. You're not hearing that interpretation in the mainstream history book. So where are you hearing these stories and this interpretation?
So the funny backstory to a lot of that, you know, I would listen to my elders. I would hear it from, you know, my grandmother, grandfather, you know, aunts, uncles, you know, like, again, going up and visiting, you know, the oral traditions of our people, when they would talk about, you know, certain times and stuff when, you know, the chiefs were, you know, making treaties and signing things, and you had, you know, Chief Poundmaker and Big Bear and all these up there that were, you know, trying to find the best way to govern their people with the system that they were, you know, they were given, because, you know, you had these outsiders, these invaders that would do everything for, you know, the fur trade, and would do everything for land, and would do everything to micromanage a people that had a pre-existing, rule of law that was very equal in its nature to all people, where, you know, our dignitaries, our chiefs, were always put last in things. You know, they lived a very humble life because they were always working for the people. They had a good balance for the environment and respect for not taking anything more than what they needed. So I was always the kid that was like raising my hand in history class, you know, that was like, you know, saying, no, I don't think that's accurate. I heard this version of that story, you know, and, you know, that treaty you're talking about was actually broken, by, you know, that government, you know, in the trade routes back and forth. So, you know, it wasn't all, you know, roses and stuff like that. So, yeah. You know, but, you know, I also spent a lot of time sitting out in the hallway too, because I was always questioning things when it came to that. Like, you know, it's like, wait a minute, that's, you know, our perspective was completely different than what is written in some of the history books. Now a lot of them have gotten better, as far as, you know, trying to give that both sides of the story or both points of view. You know, even in you know, courses of, you know, talking about politics and policy and, you know, governing nations and things like that.
Well, when,
you know, they've really taken a lot from Indigenous people.
Oh yeah, that's for certain. Mm-hmm. A lot of the philosophies and even the language that is used in our documents and our policy is definitely influenced by the Indigenous people, the First Nations. I've noticed that myself. Well, you taught me a lot too. Talking Little Bear here, Little Bear Deerfoot, I often call him. I don't know if Deerfoot is something you share with everybody, but I remember when I first met you, it was Frank Little Bear Deerfoot.
Yeah, my entire name, if you actually had to write it out, would be Frank Littlebeard Deerfoot Burke. And Burke is that other connection that we have too. So, which is a whole nother story.
That's
but
European.
Yeah, that is. Well, it's Irish. So,
yeah.
That was taken in our ancestry that goes back, you know, a few generations, where Chief Deerfoot met up with a gentleman who took the name Burke, who was half Irish and half Cree. His daughter married him, and they kept the name Burke as the surname in the family. And the reason why he left is because he was mixed blood, so he didn't feel he belonged in the Anglo society, and he didn't feel like he belonged in his indigenous communities because he was mixed blood. So he was kind of like living on his own out in the middle of nowhere, and just on a trade route. You know, the chief came through, and his daughter, for whatever happened, broke her leg. So they settled there in the encampment with him, and he took good care of her. And long story short, they fell in love, and the chief was like all excited because he, you know, the amount of care and respect that he got, and they brought him back and, you know, reaccepted him into the whole thing. Yeah. It's an interesting story with our family history. And
is that in Canada?
That was Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. And that particular, a man is your what position in your ancestry to you?
He was going back probably, what is it, 8, 9, I think about almost 10, maybe 10 generations, 10 or 10, 9, 10 generations ago.
So was he like a great, great, great uncle or a grandfather or something?
It was like a great uncle great grandfather, great, 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 great grandfather somewhere in there. In that line, which is how that falls in there. But like I said, they took that name, and that was actually passed down. So whenever they were traveling off the out of the reserve or something like that, and this actually kind of happened my father's side of the family, they kept the name Burke when they came through and settled up in the Northeast area, a couple of generations later, and landed in Massachusetts. my grandfather, he worked for the railroad, and they would pass themselves off as Black Irish.
You got accepted.
It was predominantly Catholic area. Yeah,
right, right.
Irish Catholic area. So,
right, interesting.
And, they figured they would just, you know, they would live on a farm and do their thing and, you know.
And take the name Burke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this leads me to another sort of question. When you look at some of the ideas shared in popular culture about the position of a person in a tribe that most people call the quote chief, is that the idea shared about what, you know, the leader of a tribe is, chief, or maybe there's another term? Are those ideas accurate that we hear in popular culture?
Well, I think, you know, what most people don't realize, in our tribal governments, you have a council. You know, the tribal council, the chief is the traditionalist, and he or she nowadays, that they basically help to govern and guide what the tribal council has to do. So through the tradition, so they keep them very perspective by keeping the outlook of, you know, what are we doing for our people? You know, we're not doing it for ourselves. We know we need to grow. We need to take care of our finances. We need to take care of our lands. We need to keep our e-commerce going. You know, what type of, you know, youth outreach are we handling? roadways in and out of the reservation. What lands are sacred? What lands are important to us? What lands should not be disturbed?
And this is what the chief does.
And yeah, this is all what the chief basically is a part of as a guide for the tribal council.
And the tribal council, they're like politicians more so?
Pretty much.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
Yeah, they basically, you know, you have your secretary and your tribal chairman and things like that, which is different in most areas than your tribal chief. your travel chief is pretty much like the president of the council. And then you have your chairman, your vice president, stuff like that. And,
do you find
every reservation is set up that way, but most of them aren't.
Do you find that newer generations, younger people look at the idea of the chief as out of style, something that is too antiquated to really give much credence to anymore, or do they still respect that part of the culture?
At the end of the day, they still respect the balance of what goes on, because everything that one person does affects everybody in that area, in that territory. So, with what the council and the chief has to do, they know if a person isn't getting through to the council, they don't feel like they're being heard for whatever reason, for example, then they can go directly to the chief and say, hey, we've been fighting whatever this issue is for a while. We've approached the council, I want to explain my case to you. And they listen to that. So, like I said, in the leadership position, that's very important to have, that sort of respect, because you are literally there for your people 1,000% of the time. Everything you do, everything you give up, there's tribes where, when a chief passes, speaking with the queen, they have a big celebration. Some tribes, they'll do a big celebration. Everything that chief has or had, will be given away to everybody in the entire nation. They'll get cars, property, homes.
Really? They give it to everybody. Yeah. Share it with the community, not just the family.
No, it's a giant giveaway in memory and honor of what this person is. So, and mostly that is done again for the chief's family, who will, help to facilitate that giveaway, in recognition for what this great person did. Just always remember them, always remember the positive things, always speak highly of them, things like that. So, I don't think you'd see that in Europe.
No, the queen is holding on to her stuff. It's getting passed on to her family. Yeah. They're not sharing that with everybody else in the UK. And I want to ask you this. In England, Queen Elizabeth II passed, and everybody at present is, mourning her, celebrating her. Her son becomes king now, King Charles. How does it pass on that position? Where does it go, the chief's position, after the chief passes? Is it one of his kin, or is there another way that the tribe, the community, picks the next chief?
So the way some of them do it, and again, not all of them, if there is a voting process, they'll have a new the vice chief or whatever, they may move up into that position. There's a time of mourning for it. They'll look at, the next person who has leadership skills, who has a really good outlook. They have to plead their case for why they would make a good leader. They would have to, talk to whoever, in their community halls to make sure that they're being heard, being well respected. So there's some that have a very strong voting process. There's the aspect of hereditary chiefs, whereas it would fall to the next generation.
So it varies.
Whether it would be that son or daughter, if they were living up to the standards of what that person was, when their father or mother passed, they would fill those shoes for them. So, but with that is also the burden that you are with them every step of the way. So you're not only watching what your parent is doing, but you're taking part in, listening in on those decision makings, how you're networking with those people.
If you want to get the position passed on to you as chief, you have to do that as
right. It's first. It's a humbling, and it's a very backbreaking experience, because again, like with our people, you are a servant of your nation. You don't do anything without understanding, every aspect of how it's going to affect, the majority of everybody on your tribe. Because you want to make sure that you have the respect, that you keep that You don't want the, like in the East, you know, you have your Klan's mothers. They can come in and say, hey, you know what? You're doing a bad job. You're out. So, you know, they can boot you right out of the position if they wanted to.
And well, thank you for that insight, Little Bear. Mm-hmm. I've really wanted to know a little bit more about how it works, and I appreciate that. I want to shift for a second. We only have a few minutes left, believe it or not.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
Time flies every time we talk.
It does. It does. Yeah. I love it. It's fall. It's autumn. You know, we're coming up on the equinox. And
one of my favorite times of year.
Me too. And fall colors. You mentioned to me that there's a certain meaning to many tribes. You want to expound on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, within the fall and the changing of the seasons, you know, with our people, the Cree and many nations, you know, we, you know, embellish who we are as a people and identify within, you know, our environment. You know, our environment traditionally gives us our language, our ceremony. It gives us our identity. So as the seasons change, you know, so do a lot of the outfits, the regalia, the ceremonies that we do. Certain things are brought in, certain things are put away. So in fall, like when you see colors like, you know, oranges and the reds, you know, things that are changing to browns and more, you know, more wholesome colors, talking about the season of the harvest, you know, it starts to help us reaffirm and re-effect on, you know, what is important to us. Did we have, you know, a good season? You know, was the past several months, you know, good to us? Did we live our very best in what we did as we go into this time of dormant, of self-reflection? So, you know, the fires burn bright, you know, those orange colors and stuff, and those different things, they just reminded of that community, that being brought together of the time of, you know, change, which is one of the things we can never control. It's a constant that always happens. So it, like I said, it's always been a really, you know, for me, it's like one of my favorite times of year, just to see, you know, the beautiful colors of Mother Nature and, you know, the different aspects of regalia when it comes out, the ceremonies that come out, because of just like the warmth and the community bonding that they have within what these colors are. You know, really representing the heart and soul of you as a person.
So are there autumnal equinox ceremonies that you involve yourself, that you celebrate?
Yeah, we do, like, you know, we have the harvest season, you know, the aspects of the new moon. You know, actually, in what's funny is in our traditional calendar, we have 13 months. And actually, if you spaced out the months and the terminology, even going back before, there's actually 13. There would be 13 seasons, 13 months within an entire year calendar. So a lot of our ceremonies that take part in the fall equinox and the fall seasons, you know, again, talking about the harvest and things like that, certain berries and things that come into bloom, you know, the corn, the squash, you know, pumpkin, gourds and things, you know, we really kind of dive into that because, again, that's part of our culture and part of our identity as a people. So a lot of the ceremonies take place, especially around food. You know, a lot of the songs are specifically done for the changing of the seasons and stuff like that, you know, and that leads us into our time of, you know, giving thanks for who we are. Not so much what the Thanksgiving is today, but just the fact that we're giving thanks for our season, for the coming changes, for what's ahead, you know, getting prepared for that in many different ways as we go into our sleep time or our winter time when everything really kind of dies off. And then in the spring, becomes anew again. So, like I said, those seasons are some of the most important to us because it's, and I think we talked about this on a previous show too, but it's really that time of self-reflection, of looking internally and changing with it, making it a positive aspect. Because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to winter, but we do hope that we all come out better for it when we self-reflect on what our past, you know, journey has been. Excellent. Knowing we can't change it, but we can definitely improve upon it if we need to and carry that into the new season.
So there's a little bit of fate and there's a little bit of faith.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Excellent. Little Bear, Deerfoot. Frank, my friend, thank you so much for once again sharing with us on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. Have a wonderful autumn and winter, and hopefully we're talking with you again by spring.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be down at the Wilkes Multicultural Festival this Saturday, taking part in the parade, and we'll have a booth down there in the square of Wilkes-Barre. That's coming up this weekend. We have a whole bunch of really cool stuff. So, yeah, definitely keep in touch, and I'll keep sending you stuff, and hopefully we can get together. So that'd be great.
That'd be excellent. Let me know when we're in proximity to one another, and let's make a point to get together.
Absolutely, brother. It was always good talking with you.
Same here. See you soon. And if people want to reach out, they could just Google Frank Little Bear, Deerfoot.
Yep. Yeah, they Google Frank Little Bear. Email me at franklittlebear@gmail.com. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter is all the same, Frank Little Bear. We have a square storefront at Frank Little Bear Originals that we have out there. We have a new website coming out, and you'll hear it first. I'm actually coming up with a professional fitness line too for all the years of dancing and things that I'm doing. So you can look forward to that in the near future here. So
excellent. Well, good luck with all of that.
Keep on dancing.
Keep on dancing. Nice talking to you, brother.
You too, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
And now, two excerpts from the Reader's Write section of the August 2021 edition of the Sun magazine, with the theme being summer jobs. The first piece is written by Jerry Thomas of Nevada City, California. In 1966, after graduating from high school, I took a job on the night shift at a textile printing mill in Rhode Island. The mill, which had opened in 1840, straddled the river that ran through the town downstream. Waste water from the mill, with high concentrations of chromium, arsenic, copper, and zinc, was dumped directly into the river each day. The water was discolored and smelly, and no fish could live in it. I was paid $1.70 an hour, slightly above minimum wage. The conditions were not inviting. There were 6 print machines that reached to the ceiling, and when they were all running, the floor shook and the noise made conversation difficult. The mill had no air conditioning, and exhaust fans were almost useless. On hot, humid nights, the heat was unbearable. Color Boy was my job title. I worked behind one of the print machines, filling open trays with colored dye. A row of steam-filled metal cans just above my head dried the cloth after it was printed. To my right, men in rubber boots wielding handheld mixers prepared 5-gallon buckets of dye, their feet sliding on the slick floor. Several times a night, the men would hose dye off the floor into a grate that drained directly into the river below. There was a camaraderie among the workers, like a crew on a pirate ship. Early in the shift, after the day foreman had left, one of the men would emerge from behind his machine with a white towel draped over his arm like a bartender. This was the signal that someone was going to make a beer run before the liquor store closed at 10 p.m. Something to dull the misery of the heat, noise, and toxic chemicals. At the end of that summer, I left the mill hoping I would never have to work there again. But I was also sad for the men who had to stay. More than one told me to go back to school so I wouldn't end up like them. The second installment is written by Judith Shapiro of Pacific Grove, California. In the summer of 1964, at the age of 14, I landed a job as a waitress at a Dairy Queen. I wore a white polyester dress, and at night I'd shower in it, then hang it up to dry. The restaurant had a few booths and a counter with 4 stools. I'd take orders to the dank back room, where my boss stood over a greasy grill with a cigarette hanging from his mouth and a drink always close by. He had a friend, a grizzled old guy who would visit from time to time. The two of them would hang out at the counter. One day, when my boss wasn't around, I asked the friend if I could take his order. "Sure," he said. "Give me a waitress to go with nothing on." I didn't know if he meant to be funny. I just stood there in my white polyester dress, pen and pad in hand. At the time, I had no idea I'd remember that moment for the rest of my life.
Woke up, it was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window, and the traffic wrote the words. It came a ringing up like Christmas bells and wrapping up like pipes and drums. Oh, won't you stay? We'll put on the day and we'll wear it till the the night comes. Woke up, it was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I saw was the sun, two yellow curtains, and a rainbow on my wall. The red, green, and gold to welcome you, crimson crystal beads to beckon. Stay, we'll put on a day. There's a sun show every second. Now the curtain opens on a portrait of today, and the streets are paved with passers-by, and pigeons fly, and papers lie waiting to blow away. It was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I knew, there was milk and toast and honey, and a bowl of oranges too. And the sun poured in like butterscotch and stuck to all my senses. Oh, won't you stay? We'll put on a day, and we'll talk in present tense. Away. I will bring you incense owls by night, by candlelight, by jewel light, if only you will stay. Pretty baby, won't you wake up? It's a Chelsea morning.
Corn muffins. Fog breath fragile, as youth is innocent. Bearded people cleaning grapes, sitting on plastic crates upside down, atop the wet morning ground. I have wanted to become healthy since high school, I knew. And raspberry corn muffins, hot, warm, are what I am thinking of now. With a dark cup of aromatic coffee filling my favorite time in the early light of day.
Penso che un sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipingevo le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso venivo dal vento rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito. Volare, oh, cantare, oh, nel blu, dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù, e volavo, volavo, felice, più in alto del sole ed ancora più su. Mentre il mondo pian piano spariva lontano laggiù, una musica dolce suonava soltanto per me. Volare, oh, cantare, oh, 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 nel dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù. Ma tutti i sogni nell'alba svaniscono, perché quando tramonta la luna li porta con sé. Ma io continuo a sognare negli occhi tuoi belli, che sono blu come un cielo trapunto di stelle. volare. Oh, cantare. Oh, 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 nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù, e continua a volare felice più in alto del sole ed ancora più su, mentre il mondo pian piano scompare negli occhi tuoi blu. La tua voce è una musica dolce che suona per me. Volare! Felice di stare qua giù, nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù.
And there you have it, episode 489 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Frank Littlebear. Also, The Sun Magazine. Writers Jerry Thomas and Judith Shapiro. And these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Sam and Dave, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, The Heartless Bastards, Joni Mitchell, Domenico Mondugno, Terrence Blanchard, and Branford Marsalis II. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.